Hey, Corey here. We've had an influx of new listeners, and so I just want to make sure that if you are new to the podcast, you don't just jump in and start listening to these daily episodes, which we've been doing. Please go back and listen to the first at least 8 episodes so you have an idea of what Collapse is, what it is that Corey is talking about. Also, if you've been with us for a while and you're enjoying the content, please join us on Patreon. We would love to see you there. There's a link, as always, in the description. I don't know about you, but whenever I'm in a hotel room, the world just feels different. Maybe it's something about getting out of my routine, putting myself into a different situation. I'm usually in a larger city, but it just snaps my brain into a different way of thinking, or I don't know, more clarity. And I'm feeling that today as I sit here. It's 10:30 at night. I'm watching cars drive by on the highway outside, looking at the lights of the city in the distance. On the drive here, I listened to various news programs, flipping back and forth between MS Now, which was MSNBC, CNN, and just for kicks, I like to see what the right is saying. Every once in a while, I would flip it to Fox News. And the difference is staggering. There's always been a divide, right? Even going back 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, there were news agencies that leaned more to the right, and there were news agencies that leaned more to the liberal side. But never before do I remember it being like this. Fox News is pure propaganda. I could not believe, they're talking about the same issues. And while, of course, all news agencies have their faults, I do not think that CNN is perfect. I do not think that MSNBC is perfect. That's not what I'm trying to get at with this. As a matter of fact, I hold those news agencies in particular to a high degree of fault and blame in this current situation. We've talked about some of the reasons why in previous episodes. But even then, comparatively, their news programs are level-headed conversations. They're a little more well-rounded stories. They're talking to experts, legal experts, trying to understand and break down what is and isn't legal, talking about the nuance of different situations. In this case today, specifically, they were talking about ICE and Renee Good and Jonathan Ross, the killer, whether or not what he did could be justified. Where on the Fox News program, when I turned it on, it had just started the Jesse Waters show, I believe is his name. And my word, I mean, it was like literal propaganda. It was terrible. It was quick little sound bites taken out of context, skewed, changed to mean a certain thing or to get across a point he wanted to get across, was using rhetoric of civil war, of the left being about nothing more than trying to protect illegal rapist immigrants. Like, the language was just so outrageous, so outrageously biased. And no wonder people who sit and listen to that 24 hours a day are going to be brainwashed in the way that so many of them are. It's vile. The last few days I've been thinking about this more and more, and again today sitting in my hotel room feeling this bit of clarity, it's hitting me harder than ever. And it's this idea that the U.S. can't back out of this. That at this point it seems that the only way forward is going to be a path forged by violence. And I hope that's incorrect. But I don't see a way out of this peacefully. The billionaire class has done such an amazing job at dividing the working class against each other and entrenching these tribal, polarized, opposite views of culture. We know that the only war that should be waged is the class war, and yet millions upon millions of Americans fight the culture war. In the end, I believe that what Americans, like all people, want is peace, is prosperity, is safety, the well-being of their family, a bright future to look forward to. But the path by which we have, I guess, each decided is appropriate to get there couldn't be more divergent. And the right currently is following the path of a megalomaniacal, psychopathic, narcissistic, fascist, authoritarian figure, who every day is consolidating his power further and further and is taking more drastic and more unhinged steps to seize more of that power and to exercise it in ways that are not good for the nation and are not good for the world. We have recently talked much about the sort of international fights that Donald Trump is trying to start or has started. In Venezuela, he has kidnapped their leader, but left the same regime intact. He's making threats. He's meeting with Machado, or I guess by the time you're hearing this, he has already met with Machado. He's making increasingly urgent threats against Iran and Greenland. He continues to say things about Mexico and Colombia and Canada. But since we've addressed that, I prefer for a moment to address a little bit further what's happening inside of the U.S. While on Fridays we talk about individual news sources and articles and the things that happened one by one, today I just want to talk a little bit more about the wider implications and try and piece together the picture as a whole. Donald Trump has been ramping up, and his administration has been ramping up, the blatant use of not just fascist language, but language that comes specifically from Nazi Germany. The U.S. Department of Labor profile on Twitter released a post basically that just said, "One homeland, one people, one heritage." Well, not word for word, the same exact template with very similar phrases were used in Nazi Germany by Hitler, though the phrase then was one people, one Reich, which is one state, and one Führer, which is one leader. Then Kristi Noem had a press conference in which she very openly and proudly used the phrase "one of ours, all of yours," which is apparently, while not directly quoted by Hitler in Nazi Germany, it is a play on a phrase by someone who was summarizing the way that Nazi Germany was reacting to attacks on Nazi soldiers in Yugoslavia and the Czech Republic, which was basically saying, if you hurt one of ours, we will return that on your heads 50 or 100 fold. These are just two examples that I saw in the last 10 minutes as I was scrolling through Reddit and Twitter today. They're not trying to hide the fact. And they can, they'll continue to say, "Well, why are you calling us Nazis? Don't call us Nazis." But very clearly, they are doing and saying the things that Nazis would. On top of that, they've also been increasing the language around basically saying that Trump and Trump's administration and Trump's federal officers, the ICE agents and others, have complete immunity. They have unfettered power, unlimited power. Trump the other day just said in an interview, he was asked if there was any limitation to his power. And he said, "Yes, the only limitation is my own morality in my own head. Nothing else can stop me." There was a post in the Collapse subreddit where someone was asking about ICE and whether Americans thought that ICE would simply go away after they felt that they had deported enough people, and how that was obviously not true. And the comments there were very interesting, many of which talked about how the average American may not be thinking too much about it. They don't want to think about it. It makes them sad. The U.S. is huge, so if it doesn't directly impact them, they don't want to pay attention to it. Or conversely, if they are paying attention to it, they simply believe that all we have to do is make it to the midterms, that as long as Trump gets beaten in the midterms, that all of this is going to just go away. Trump has surrounded himself by yes men and yes women. The whole purpose of Project 2025 was to get rid of as many bipartisan or neutral or independent people in the government and replace them with loyal Trump followers. That by so doing, nothing could remove him from power, even if he became unpopular by the general public. He needs popularity only to take him so far. And once the popularity is gone, he just needs to have power. In a democracy, you need people in order to get into power. But once you've efficiently broken democracy and you've gained sufficient power, you don't need people anymore. And some of the comments in this post were talking about how there's the poem about first they came for the socialists, then they came for the X, and they came for the Y, then they came for the Z, right? And how most MAGA do not seem to realize that they are included in that poem, and that we find ourselves in a situation right now where they're all gung-ho in supporting this because it's owning the libs, it's hurting the immigrants, it's hurting the brown people, it's hurting the LGBTQ folks, it's hurting the Karens with purple hair. Going back to Jesse Waters, he was mocking the police chief in Minneapolis for crying. He cried in sympathy for what was happening and the fact that they were being targeted by the federal government. And Jesse Waters had Benny Johnson on, and they were just cackling at the idea that a man would be crying at anything at all. I mean, they really said the only time a man can cry is when their children are born. But anyway, the point here being that as long as it appears that Trump is enacting violence on the enemies of the right, even though they may be fellow Americans, the right does not care. I mean, they do care. They're happy. They love it. They love to see it. ICE is going door to door in Minneapolis right now. They are grabbing Target workers. There was a video today of a 17-year-old boy being ripped out of Target. He worked there. As they're carrying him away, he's claiming he's a U.S. citizen. He's a U.S. citizen. They throw him in the car. And then it cuts to another video of people who went and found him after the ICE agents had kicked him out of the car, basically. And he is just sobbing. They're asking, you know, are you okay? Are you okay? And he's saying, no, I'm not okay. They just, you know, they threw me on the ground. He's bleeding. He's a kid. And once they apparently determined that they couldn't keep him detained, they just dumped him on the side of the road or in a parking lot. If it hasn't been apparent up to this point, it should be apparent now that Democrat leadership, they don't have a spine. They're not doing anything to stop this. They are simply standing by and watching it all take place. There are still a significant portion of the American people who walk the middle ground and give the benefit of the doubt and try and inject nuance and a wait-and-see type attitude. Again, hoping that the midterms here at the end of the year, the Dems will come out strong and that's going to, they'll take back Congress. And by taking back Congress, that will throttle Donald Trump's power. He's not doing anything in Congress anyway. What are you going to do? Impeach him again for the third time? Didn't have much of an effect last time. And so it brings up this question of what can be done? What will be done? What is the only solution? And it seems more and more that we're edging towards violence. Michael Fanon, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing his name right. He was one of the officers that was attacked and nearly killed in the Jan 6 invasion of the Capitol. He was a police officer there trying to keep rioters out of the Capitol. And he was on a podcast just recently. He's been rather outspoken since the ordeal in 2021. And he was saying, he was asked the question, and I'm not going to try and quote him directly, but he said something along the lines of, Americans need to use their Second Amendment rights to protect themselves in self-defense when necessary. And those on CNN and J.B. Pritzker, the governor of Illinois, you know, saying, no, don't listen to him. That's not the way we need to handle this. We need to keep things peaceful. And I just wonder, is there any path in peace? And I'm not calling for violence. I'm not saying that violence is the answer. I just am saying that I don't know that more No Kings protests is going to make the change that we need. And what happens when somebody does inevitably fire on ICE when they try and open their door, you know, when they're trying to break in or break into their vehicle or take someone that they love by force or whatever, or when somebody goes out of their way to commit violence against ICE proactively? The U.S. feels like a tinderbox right now, set to potentially explode in violence. The idea of civil war is being normalized more and more in the news. I hear the term coming up, especially from the right, because it feels like they hunger for it. And why wouldn't they, considering in their minds, if what they think is they need to win and they need to vanquish their enemies at all costs, and they currently happen to have control of the entire government, and also their population has the majority of the firearms. In the romanticized version of what a civil war is in their heads, they may be saying, yeah, that sounds pretty great. When, of course, the reality of war is so much different than that romanticized version in your head. Do they want the U.S. version of Syria, of Sudan? Do they want years or decades of conflict that decimates the economy, that kills thousands, tens of thousands or more people? Even if it wasn't, you know, a full-on disastrous war like Syria, is it an extended bout of the Troubles in which no person in the public eye can feel safe ever again, knowing that they may be the next victim of an assassination or a bombing attempt?
No family can feel safe going and having an outing or even just going to the grocery store without knowing if their location is going to be the next terrorist plot, the next place shot up, which we're frankly not far from that anyway in the U.S. with the number of mass shootings that are happening, primarily being perpetrated by white men on the right. This is all, of course, exacerbated by the fact that conflict is what Donald Trump wants. He wants to be able to invoke the Insurrection Act, potentially martial law, so that he can feel justified or have his what he thinks is a justification for canceling the midterm elections and then canceling the elections after that. I do not think that he is joking when he says that he wants to start a war in order to cancel elections. That's not innocent teasing. That is foreshadowing. That is desensitizing people to that idea. That is testing the waters to see how his people will latch onto it and spread it for him. And that is happening. And because of his desire for that conflict, it is constant baiting. Does he actually care about removing immigrants from the country? Only as it pertains to optics, only as it pertains to making his people feel like he's doing something. The actual consequences of removing them from the country is not what I believe he is after in any way. I don't believe he even thinks that it would be helpful. He is stoking his people, and he's trying to bait the left into committing violence, which escalates into riots, which escalates into the Insurrection Act, and worse. There is a large-scale effort to demonize the left, to dehumanize the left, which is something that fascist regimes always do to the other, to the political other. That's why Rene Good was labeled a domestic terrorist for trying to drive her car away. They are unironically using and throwing around that terrorist term to justify violence on anyone who they wish. Jesse Waters was talking about Antifa and how the left will insist that Antifa is not a real group, and yet it's so obvious that Antifa is an organization, a terrorist organization that is out to commit violent acts and to protect, again, the murderous, rapist immigrants who came across this country, or came across the border into our country, the worst of the worst, as they'll say. And Antifa wants nothing but to stop the law from protecting the average American against, you know, those against those people. I think I'm just surprised at how quickly we got to this point and how blatant and in our faces it really is now. The president of the United States and his administration is openly declaring that they have unlimited power and that nothing can stop them from doing whatever it is they want to do, which right now is harass, detain, harm immigrants, to do the same to anyone who would dare stand up to ICE or protect them, and of course then to harass and threaten the rest of the world in all the ways that we've seen. I'm encouraged by all the videos that we've seen of increasing amounts of people yelling at, harassing, shaming ICE agents wherever they go, a sort of relentless onslaught of telling them how terrible they are, of being in their faces, of disrupting and making sure that they feel no peace. Is it effective? Will they care? I don't know. In a lot of ways, I have to imagine that morale is not great for many of them, though some of them, I'm sure, thrive on that because it justifies their hatred and fuels their justification of violence. The truth is, by the time you hear this episode, there are likely other events that have taken place. Today is Monday night, Monday the 12th. You're hearing this probably on like the 20th. So my assumption, my question for the future me a week from now is, who else has been killed? What other major event or escalation has happened between now and then? What does naive Corey from a week ago not know about that you, the listener, knows about today? I hope the answer is nothing. But the rate at which things seem to continue to change, I think that hope would be naive. If you're in the U.S., especially if you're in one of these cities being affected, I'm thinking of you. You know, I have empathy for you. I am here in the U.S., and I feel so many of those difficult, anxious, gut-wrenching emotions. I'm lucky enough not to be in an area right now that is heavily impacted by ICE, though I'm sure at some point my area and every area will be. For those of you throughout the rest of the world who are also impacted by the actions of the U.S. administration at this time, whether it be in one of the countries that he has directly threatened, or any country in the world who is impacted, which will be all countries, by the U.S.'s reckless desire for power, I feel for you as well. I wish I could say that I'm sorry in a way that meant I had something that I could do to change it, that it was in a way, in essence, my fault and I'll help fix it for you. I can say I'm sorry on behalf of a U.S. citizen who most definitely did not vote for this. And yet I can't help feeling that guilt of just being a U.S. citizen in general and knowing that the world looks differently upon me now than ever before. And that's not to say that the U.S. has ever been something that all countries used to look up to. The U.S. has been doing this type of thing for very long, just much more veiled. But it certainly has escalated now. And any attempt, you know, for previous allies and countries that at least viewed the U.S. as a sort of steadying power in the world, that is now obviously not true. It has become a major destabilizing factor. All right, I'm rambling at this point. I appreciate you being here. We'll continue to watch and monitor the situation as it rapidly evolves in the U.S. As always, feel free to drop me a note, send me an email at Corey John on Reddit, or you can find me at breakingdowncollapse@gmail.com. All right, I'll release another tomorrow. Thanks. Hey, Corey here. If you are listening to the back catalog of Breaking Down Collapse, thank you. Those episodes are so vital. They're so important. But I also wanted to let you know that I am now doing daily episodes. Yes, that's right. Here on the podcast, daily episodes. So if you are enjoying the back catalog, great. Please also feel free to zoom forward to the most recent episodes. Catch us daily. They are quick little episodes, and I think you'll enjoy them. Thanks.